Welcome to the HSP podcast. I'm Julie Bieland, and I'm a psychotherapist specializing in high sensitivity. And I'm really excited to bring you a series of guest hosts on the podcast. I've chosen these hosts because they have something that I believe will really support you, and each one of them has their own type of specialty. So I think that there will be a lot of value in listening to these episodes. And we invite you to explore more episodes and more resources for the highly sensitive person at sensitiveconnection.com. Hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us for today's event. I'm Andrea Weber, and I'm a guest speaker here at the Sensitive Empowerment Community. And I'm really thrilled to be presenting a series of events around environmental sensitivity. So today's topic is managing the initial overwhelm and making important decisions when you first discover you have an environmental sensitivity. I've been an environmentally sensitive person now for quite some time, and so this information is from my own learnings and from my own experiences. So the first thing we need to ask ourselves is, are we actually sensitive to what's in the environment? So some of the symptoms that people typically experience along with environmental sensitivities include things like fatigue, very low in energy, the feeling of tiredness, being exhausted, and often just feeling wiped out from being in the spaces that they have to be in. So this is a consistent kind of ongoing problem for people, it can become. So body pain and joint pain, headaches and head pain. And I will say here that the head pain, particularly experienced from an electrically sensitive person, is going to be quite different from what's experienced with a normal headache, or what people would call, a usual thumping headache. The head pain experienced with electrical sensitivities is like a burning or stinging sensation, and it can be quite nasty. Also, people can experience those sharp pins and needles. So this kind of sensations can happen into the ear, the side of the head, also on the top of the head is quite common, but can also happen into the jawline and down the neck as well. So people can experience headaches as well, but the actual head pain that's experienced is quite different. So that's just something to be mindful of. People often report difficulty sleeping, and of course, this then compounds all of these other symptoms you can see here. So brain fog. When people hear that term, they're talking about concentration issues. So difficulty focusing, attention to detail, difficulty recalling information. So memory isn't quite there the way it should be. So this is all comes under the term of brain fog. Heart arrhythmias. Now this is irregular heartbeat. And again, this is experienced quite often by electrically sensitive people. And when you think about it, our body is an electrical system and our hearts are an electrical pump. So when you think about it in that respect, if we are sensitive, when we are exposed to these artificial fields, it is creating that electrical interference between the artificial field and our natural energetic and electrical fields. So this is what happens to people who are electrically sensitive. And so heart arrhythmias, irregular heartbeat is quite common. People can experience irritability, general discomfort and feeling unwell, and also tinnitus or tinnitus, which is the ringing in the ear. So an environmental sensitivity usually develops through consistent low-level exposure to environmental stresses over a period of time. So unless you've had an acute exposure, developing an environmental sensitivity is something that will usually happen gradually and over a period of time with consistent exposure. So environmental stresses include things like EMFs, chemicals and mold, and we'll look at some of these in a moment. A couple of the telltale signs, though, to be aware of is if when you leave these environments, you don't experience these symptoms or you experience them to a lesser degree, that can be a real telltale sign that it's possibly something in that environment that may be triggering these symptoms. The other thing to be aware of is that if you've been able to access public spaces and go into areas that never really caused a problem before, and you've really never experienced this, but you start to notice these symptoms creep in when you have been in these spaces. So these were environments that were once well tolerated, but for some reason, these symptoms tend to be there and you're noticing this more and more. So that can also be a telltale sign that it may be something in the environment that is triggering this. So environmental stresses, I've included some here. Now, these aren't in any particular order, but I have put EMFs or electromagnetic fields at the top because unless you're sensitive, you really can't tell that that these things are in your environment or that you might be sitting amongst these things because we can't use any of our other senses. We can't see them. We can't smell them, taste them. So our senses really don't work with EMFs unless, of course, we are sensitive and we do pick up on this energy. And unfortunately, we are creating saturated environments where there's very little space now that you can be in without these frequencies. So chemicals are everywhere as well, particularly in built-up areas. The quality of our air simply isn't what it used to be, and there's lots of pollution in and outside of our homes. Some of us may be fortunate enough to live in a space where we have really good quality fresh air, but particularly for people in city or built-up spaces and city areas, there's all of the fumes and exhausts and there's a lot of things to contend with. So mold is a big one as well. We've had lots of flooding around Queensland and New South Wales recently. So people are on the lookout for mold, particularly in water damaged buildings. So also if you have an environment of high humidity and poor natural light and poor ventilation, this can all be a great recipe for mold to grow. I've included weather there because a lot of HSPs and environmentally sensitive people are impacted by the weather also. We've had quite horrific electrical storms here over the past week. And even though I had all of the management tools and I knew how to take care of myself during that time and knew the best place to be, I was still quite affected by those things. And it was quite challenging to get through the week. And I really did feel quite fatigued and drained at the end of last week. So natural weather patterns and also change of seasons too can affect people. So we also have light and noise. A lot of HSPs are really affected by light and noise and the overstimulation that these things can bring. And they can be natural or artificial. So when we first discover that we may have an environmental sensitivity, it can really be quite an overwhelming and an isolating experience, not knowing what to do or who can help, where to turn. And some of the emotions experienced can include things like fear and frustration. So fear comes in with all of the unknowns, and we'll have so many questions around this. What if I can't find a doctor who can help? What if I have to leave my home? How do I remediate my home from these things? What if I can't control what's in the environment? Will I have to resign from my work? Why didn't I know about these things? So this all comes in with the fear and frustration. And that also builds when we do start to try and talk to people, but they may not be very supportive or understanding. They may not believe us. And particularly if they don't have any issues or problems with these things themselves, sometimes it can be hard for other people to understand what's going on for us. So we can get frustrated. Other people may get frustrated as well. And then I guess anger can build with that also, because we then discover that we are saturating our environments with these things. And some of these environmental stresses cause a lot of problems for people, even people who wouldn't describe themselves as being environmentally sensitive. So the anger can build about why these things are so freely, allowed in our environments, why we're saturating our spaces with these things. And then, of course, we find that there are ingredients in our cosmetics and our personal care products that are readily available on our shelves that have been banned overseas, but yet we are still going and purchasing them in our shops. So all of these things can create a sense of great frustration and anger. We can blame ourselves, and also we can blame other people as well. So we may be blaming ourselves with those questions of why didn't I know this before? Why have I been exposing myself and my family to these things? Why are these things in our public spaces? So there's a lot of blame and anger that can be tied up with that. And when we do start feeling more comfortable in explaining things to people, we often feel a sense of guilt. So a sense of feeling a burden or an inconvenience when we are asking people to meet our needs, because quite often changes and adjustments have to be made, and we may not feel too comfortable talking to people about that, and we can feel like a burden and an inconvenience. So these things are all very natural emotions to experience, but the common thing about them all, I guess, is that they are really low frequency emotions. And they keep us very contracted. They keep our experience very contracted. So even though they're natural things to experience, we really want to turn our focus away from these things and focus on what we can do right now, because we may not be able to do everything at once. That's unrealistic. And we may not have all the answers all at once. But there is a lot of things that we can empower ourselves to do immediately, and look into organising. So that's what we'll talk about now. So I've developed a little roadmap here about what some of the things are that we can do to make a difference and to start making a difference. And I've deliberately kept these not numbered, because these will all occur concurrently for people, and people will do them to meet their own individual needs. One of the first things, though, I would do is to see your doctor. And even though your doctor may not have an understanding of environmental sensitivities, I think it's really important to talk to our general practitioners, our medical doctors, about what's going on for us. Every doctor has a duty of care to listen and show respect and try and help their patients as much as they can. And if they really don't have any background in environmental medicine or sensitivities, they can certainly do some research for us, and they can offer a referral. And one of the things that I've come to realize is the only way that we are going to get more understanding and acceptance of these things in mainstream medicine is if more and more of our doctors are aware of these issues for people. So if we avoid going and seeing our regular doctors about these things, it's not even going to be on the agenda to discuss. So this is something that I feel a lot more confident doing now, but it's certainly something that I had to build up to and talk freely and openly about this to people. Another really important person to get on board is a building biologist or an IEP, so an indoor environment professional. And these people will have all the equipment and the tools that are needed to take accurate readings, to be able to let you know exactly what you are exposed to in your environments, and to be able to give some accurate solutions. So a building biologist can also help you prioritize discussions with family members. Not that anybody needs validation for what they're trying to explain, but if that explanation also comes from somebody who is qualified, who has a lot of experience in dealing with these things, that can certainly help other people in the family understand and offer their support. So we'll talk in a moment about making adjustments to reduce triggers and minimize symptoms. This is really important that we try and reduce the physical pain and discomfort and the physical symptoms that we're experiencing. And really the only way to do that is to reduce the triggers in our environments until, of course, we become much more confident with some self-management tools along the way. But that's the first and foremost thing, and we'll talk about some of those things to do in a moment. While you're doing all of this, it's really important to take breaks, if you can, away from the environments that you're in and use some tools for physical relief. So by getting away from the environment, you're giving your body a chance to rest, a chance to restore, and just to get that healing back. Because if you're constantly dealing with physical discomfort, physical pain, and all of these physical symptoms, your nervous system and your body's on high alert. You're in survival mode the whole time. So we really need to start to tone that down so the body can get a break. You can get a break from having to deal with all of it, and then you'll be in a much better position to be able to implement some of these other tools and strategies. And this is particularly the case for this next one here, nurturing our emotional well-being and our emotional health. This is often something environmentally sensitive people forget to do because we are so focused on our physical environments and reducing those physical symptoms that we're experiencing. But nurturing our emotional health and well-being is essential. As HSPs, we know this. We really do, though, need to work on all of these things here first, because if we are in a place of physical discomfort and physical pain most of the time, we're really not going to be in a position where we can look after ourselves from an emotional well-being perspective, because the physical symptoms that we're experiencing are overwhelming to deal with. So we do need to take steps to minimize that first, and then we're in a much better frame of mind and in a much better space to be able to manage our emotional health and well-being. And that becomes a lot easier to do as well. And then, of course, we have all the self-empowered sensitivity management tools that provide us with continuous learning. And I've developed lots of these along the way that have greatly helped me manage these sensitivities. So I love this little roadmap because I think it really does typify what is experienced by someone with an environmental sensitivity. You certainly do experience the ups and downs, and it isn't just a straight road ahead. And there's lots to learn as you discover what works and what doesn't work for you personally. So some of the tools that we can use for relief and well-being. So physical relief is needed when sensitivity symptoms are heightened and significant discomfort is being experienced. So these are some of the things that I've been able to do while I've been at home. A lot of people find comfort in a warm to hot bath or shower. Some people use Epsom salts or magnesium flakes. Use sparingly, but if you would like to pop in a little natural essential oil that is calming, but don't use a lot, only a very small amount, and make sure it's something that is tolerated on the skin. So be careful with that one if you're going to use essential oils. But the magnesium flakes and also the Epsom salts are great to relax the muscles and to just bring in that relaxing and that soothing effect. One of the things that I have learned, though, is that it's important to stay warm following this, because when we are relaxed and our muscles are all relaxed and we're in that calm state, if we then go into a cooler environment, everything then contracts and the tension comes back in, and often the pain might return as well. So we want to stay comfortably warm following this wherever possible. Sitting or resting supported in for comfort in a comfortable position, and distraction is helpful too. So things that you can engage in at this time that will be helpful, that will be relaxing. Maybe there's something that you would like to read at this time. Anything that will help you, I guess, get your focus away from the possibility of symptoms increasing. So taking the time and space needed for restoration, and all of those self-care soothing things that you can do, like while you are sitting and resting comfortably, having a warm drink, using the calming sense of natural essential oils, even hugging your pet, that provides good distraction as well. And we often forget about the healing abilities these very simple things have for us, and they're all important to help relax at this time. So a pain relief management protocol to discuss with your doctor, whether that's prescription medicine under the supervision of your doctor or following a natural pain relief protocol. It's really essential that we are giving our bodies a break wherever we possibly can, because as I said before, if our bodies are in constant pain and discomfort, we're really not in a good place to be able to heal anything at all. So we need to really be reducing that, toning that down, so we are in a much better position for healing to take place. So minimizing triggers. These are things that we can do away from the home. So when we're away from home, we can minimize time spent in environment that trigger these symptoms for us. So for instance, I don't spend a lot of time in built up areas or shopping centers because I always feel really drained when I come out of them. So I have to be in these spaces sometimes, but I do try and minimize the time that I'm there and also minimize the time that that I'm going to these places also. And scheduling activities when the body is more resilient. So for instance, I'm doing this recording now quite early in the morning because that's when I feel at my best to be able to do these things. And I also feel more resilient and energized at this time. I wouldn't go making an appointment in a built-up space, say at 4 or 5 p.m. in the afternoon, because I know by that stage my energy levels and resilience isn't going to be where it needs to be perhaps. So extra self-care before and after being in these environments is essential. And I know on the community as HSPs, we talk about this a lot. So organising a support person to share responsibilities. For instance, if you have to go a long distance and into those built-up spaces, having somebody there just to support you with driving and things like that, if possible, can be a big help. So natural essential oils that can produce a sense of calm. Try to avoid oils that have synthetic fragrance and things like that added to them. But there are natural oils, things like lavender, chamomile, things like clove, rosemary, tea tree. I find those sorts of oils, peppermint, very grounding, very uplifting. So that's a very individual thing too. So you can experiment there with what works for you in that respect. Self-compassion is such an incredibly important tool, and this comes in with nurturing our emotional health and well-being. This is something that takes time and it takes practice, because particularly when we first discover we have these sensitivities, it can be really difficult for us to manage everything. And we're really just focusing, I guess, on minimizing what we experience as the first port of call, and then these other management tools and emotional well-being will follow. So self-compassion does take time, but when we're able to give this to us, to ourselves, and it really does help in our recovery because we can extend that kindness and gentleness that we would to somebody else who's perhaps experiencing these things. So self-compassion is really important. Positive distraction. I can think of a time when I had to go for an appointment into a very built-up space somewhere I usually never go, and there was rows and rows of traffic, and it could have been a really overwhelming situation. But one of the little things that I did to help distract myself at that time was I engaged myself in reading bumper stickers and signs on trucks and on buildings, and really tried to focus on those things and the story behind them. And I guess it didn't prevent symptoms from starting to develop, but it really helped in the management of what could have been there. So it did help prevent them becoming more severe because of the overwhelm that I could have experienced at that time. So anything with positive distraction, I find very useful. And of course, the pain management protocol that we spoke about before, to have that with you if you need it, is something that really just is, it provides that security and support for you as well. So we'll talk about some things here in terms of mindful mitigation. And these are some things that you can do immediately pretty much. And they're also things that a building biologist might be able to help you with as well. I remember going through all of our cupboards, looking at the ingredients on all of my cosmetic products, personal care products, and was really quite amazed at what I found there. And I gradually started to replace those sorts of products with fragrance-free, organic, and natural products. Reducing the use of chemicals in and around the home is really important as well. And I know our workplaces now are looking at developing fragrance-free workplace policies and encouraging people to go fragrance-free at the workplace. So I find with chemical sensitivities, we are slowly making progress, in public spaces and work and workspaces in reducing the amount of chemicals that people are using. So that's a very good thing to see. In terms of electrical sensitivities, we can certainly use wired versus wireless connection for our online activities for internet, and disabling settings for Wi-Fi and Bluetooth on our devices. This is something people often aren't aware of. Even if you have a wired connection for everything, quite often people find that there are Wi-Fi and Bluetooth settings on their devices, and if these settings aren't manually disabled, then quite often your device is still searching for signals. So it's still producing those radio frequencies. So disabling those settings and making sure that you can disable those settings properly before you make these purchases is something to be aware of. Turning Wi-Fi routers off at night and keeping them at a distance, people also find helpful as well. It's interesting that even people who don't describe themselves as environmentally sensitive have noticed a difference in their quality of sleep when they turn their routers off at nighttime. And of course, that makes sense because at nighttime, that's our body's opportunity to rest and restore. And if we're continually exposing ourselves to things at that time that possibly could be triggering symptoms for us, we're not giving ourselves that break and restoration that we need. So exposure reducing strategies when using a cell or mobile phone. So and telecommunications and manufacturing companies give us this advice now as well, is that some of the things we can do is using speakerphones. So instead of holding the phone up to the side of our heads, we can hold the phone away from our heads and our bodies, and we can actually use the speaker facility. There's even nice little stands that you can purchase now where you can sit the phone in a stand and use the speaker facility. So you don't even really need to be holding the phone to use it. Turning your phone to airplane mode when you aren't using it and or turning it off altogether is a great strategy too. Keeping a landline phone wherever possible also is really good for electrically sensitive people, and making sure that your landline phone has a speaker facility as well. So in terms of air quality in the home, air purifiers are a great thing to have in the home. Make sure you have a HEPA filter with your air purifier. And these are great for reducing VOCs, odors, and also just purifying the air that you're all breathing. So this is something that I have in my home, and I have found that they do make a difference. And dehumidifiers are important too. If you are concerned about mold or have a mold problem, dehumidifiers are great for getting rid of that excess humidity. And remember, we said that if you have high levels of humidity and low light, low natural ventilation, and perhaps if your building has been water damaged in some way, that's a recipe for mold growth. So the dehumidifiers are essential in homes with high humidity. So wherever possible, reducing light and noise. I will say with the dehumidifiers, some of them can be quite noisy. So if you find that uncomfortable, make sure you get a noise reduction or a low noise producing dehumidifier. I know a lot of HSPs and electrically sensitive people have problems with fluorescent lighting, so that's something to be aware of as well, and that compact fluorescent lighting. And so where possible, reducing the use of those sorts of lights in your home can help as well. So if you do suspect there's a mold problem, again, getting a building biologist in to check this out for you. They, again, will have the proper tools to test for these things. And I'll also include a link to a mold treatment and mitigation online course that was developed by a qualified medical doctor who's qualified in treating mold illness and also very, very knowledgeable about mold mitigation. So it's really essential to follow the proper protocols there. So thinking about the future, there's some important decisions that need to be made in and around home and work. And as I said before, you won't have the answers to all of these questions immediately. That's unrealistic. But what we can do is focus on starting where we are with what we have, taking some immediate steps and going from there. There will need to be discussions with family and with colleagues around this, because there will need to be changes and adjustments made. The reality for an environmentally sensitive person is that they just can't stay in an environment that's making them sick. So changes do need to be made, and everybody in the family will benefit from those changes. And as I said, a building biologist can help you manage those and put forward some really essential solutions there within the family home. I'm actually going to be hosting another event based around this topic, because it's something people have a lot of difficulty with and quite often don't feel comfortable. They feel people will judge them and won't understand. And sometimes that can be quite upsetting and demeaning for people, and they just, you can shut down and not want to openly talk to people about it. So this is a topic that I'm going to create a whole event around to help people navigate their way through that one. But we must make these immediate adjustments that are conducive to well-being. Investments will have to be made, and that's something that needs to be planned and organised as well. An investment in a building biologist. You may need mould remediation in your home. That's an investment. There are courses available and research that you will need to do, and that's all investment as well. But these assistance, this assistance from external organisations can really, really make a difference to minimise your exposure to the things that trigger symptoms. And it also can help you create a comfortable and a safe living space for you and your family. So all of these decisions do require short and long-term planning, and they do require cooperation from others. So while you are planning to work through some of these things and making some of these choices and decisions, there's a lot of tools that we can use in the meantime for our well-being and to be gaining that relief. That's so important. So start with what you can do to make a difference. So before we go on to our question and answer section, I just want to make people aware of some free resources that I have available on my website. And we're going to provide some links so that you can freely access all of these things. I've developed an environmental sensitivity quiz for people to take, and that really does allow people to see the different types of environmental stresses that do exist possibly in their environments. And quite often this is a real eye-opener for people, because they're things that they haven't even considered or thought about. I've also designed this quiz specifically to allow people the opportunity to discover if they may be sensitive to what's in the environment and if a sensitivity may be starting to develop. So if sensitivity symptoms are only quite mild, it's really, really important if you start noticing these symptoms that you are able to put some management tools in place, start doing some things to mitigate your environment, to reduce those triggering of symptoms, and really get hold of some manageable, some workable management tools. Because what that does is it can often prevent the sensitivity from becoming more severe. Because when a sensitivity becomes more severe, it is more challenging to manage. So if we can come in and put some intervention practices in place right at the start, when you first start noticing these things, you're in a much, much better position to be able to manage things and to be able to heal. So that is really, really important. And I've designed the sensitivity quiz specifically around allowing people to identify those things. It's also great to take this information to your doctor. It's a great way of starting that conversation and to simply let your doctor know that you've answered these questions, you're concerned about things in your environment, and you've used this as a guideline, and your doctor will be able to look at that with you. There's also a free opt-in on the website there for regular communications and for newsletter. And you'll find on the website too additional resources for mitigation of the environment. And I will say here too that with the free opt-in for regular communications, there is a complimentary download that you'll receive with that, where you get my top 10 tips for managing an environmental sensitivity. So that's a free download when you sign up for the newsletter. You'll also find the Self-Empowered Sensitivity Management Program that you can access there on the site as well. And that provides a whole range of practical solutions and management tools for people to manage what is there in terms of the sensitivity and to be able to minimize the impact of that. So that concludes the main presentation today for our event. I'd like to thank you very much for joining us, and we'll take some questions and provide some answers now. So thank you very much for joining us for today's event.